Welcome to Money Talks, the program which advises you on how to make the most of your money. And with us tonight are our two investment experts, George Harris and David Sims. George, what's the surest investment for the ordinary man in the street?
Well, in the booming share-owning democracy situation we find ourselves in, there are all sorts of positive investment opportunities. You can invest in shares, commodities, property, unit trusts. But of course, the problem is that all of these can go down as well as up, according to the market.
Right.
So I would say the most solid profit-bearing investment, in other words, the surest way of making your money, is to steal it off other people.
So basically theft?
Yeah.
Right. David?
Yes, I'd go along with that. If you invest in stocks and shares, you're at the mercy of the market, but if you knock over a granny down some dark alley, run off with her purse, then you're pretty certain to come out ahead at the end of that transaction.
That's right.
Then, you know, once you've done, say, 300 grannies, the money soon mounts up.
Now, what about, say, granny bonds?
Yes, tying them up's a good idea.
So our shrewd investor has accrued his capital from his 300 grannies. What then?
Well, if you want to sink the capital into something that's going to give you a regular source of untaxable income, then my advice is rent some rooms in a hotel, hire some prostitutes, and open up a brothel.
A brothel?
Yes, you can't go wrong there. You're drawing on a very stable, perpetual market of sad, middle-aged men.
That's right, and there's all sorts of bonuses that can accrue, you know, like, say, the Tory politician who doesn't know about the two-way mirror and the video camera.
Oh, yes.
Now, what other investments would you recommend?
Well, of course, some things never lose their value, like gold, antiques, and so on, and I would say that it's definitely worth your while buying a senior police officer.
Senior police officer?
Yes, you should be able to pick one up for around £5,000 per annum. Of course, if he's in the Met, you'll have to pay London waiting, but it's a good investment.
Yes. Do you know, I bought a detective inspector way back in 1979, and he's a chief constable now.
Well, there you go.
Well, thank you, David and George, for those tips on making money in today's financial environment.
It's a pleasure.
Next week, we look at apartheid and advise you on how to disinvest in South African industry and put it into Bolivia, where the wages are even lower. But now...
It's time for the Million Pound Radio Show. And here are your hosts, Andy Hamilton and Nick Preble.
Good evening. In tonight's show, we'll be questioning some familiar proverbs. For instance, whoever said, "Time is a great healer," obviously hasn't been to see it. But you must excuse me, listeners, if I seem a bit subdued tonight, but this is the last of the series, which means that Nick and I are moving on to pastures new. I've got a job as a national party organiser for the SDP. It's part-time. 1 hour a week. And Nick, you'll be pleased to know, has got a job on TV as a...
Children's TV presenter! Boo! Yeah! Yeah! Woohoo! Yeah! Brilliant! Children's TV presenter!
So great news for Nick there.
Oh yeah, great news! Yeah! Woohoo!
It's a Saturday morning.
Yes, so. Saturday morning show, yeah! It's a bill!
And Nick, how long are you going to keep this up?
Till the drugs wear off, yeah!
When's that going to be?
Any moment now, yeah! Hey, saying they've worn off, can I put it down now?
Drugs, you should be careful.
Yeah, I know, but you've got to take mind-bending drugs if you're a TV presenter, you know, on a kid's show. Because
what?
The drugs alter your perception of reality and stop you dying of embarrassment.
All right. Well, later we'll be tackling some important questions like, is the Channel Tunnel a good idea? The answer is yes, provided the French aren't allowed to use it.
And we'll be reviewing TV's In at the Deep End series. In this week's edition, Chris Searle tries his hand at becoming a martyr of Allah in the Gulf War. And that's the last of the present series. But now it's over to Steve Trent for Sports Preview.
Well, next Wednesday, of course, is the big soccer international against Yugoslavia, and playing up front for England will be Gary Boddle. Welcome, Gary. Now then, a very important game on Wednesday.
Very important, Steve. It's vital we get a good result, yeah.
And a very important game for you personally.
Well, absolutely, yeah. A lot of good strikers are competing for places up front, so I need to deliver the goods, you know.
So knowing that your whole international career is on the line on Wednesday night doesn't put you under any intolerable pressure then at all?
Well, Steve, there's always pressure, but I'm confident, you know.
Confident, hey. Yes. Very, very good. Now, Gary, a lot of experts have likened you to the old England striker, Jeff Astle.
Well, that's very kind of them, Steve. I never actually saw Jeff Astle play. I was too young, but I'm very flattered.
Well, Jeff Astle played for England in the 1970 World Cup in Mexico. He was a very popular player.
Oh, right.
Until he missed that absolute sitter against Brazil. And when he got back home, there wasn't a pub in the land that would serve him. I saw him last week queuing at a soup kitchen. Yeah. Now, does that sort of possible nightmare setback ever worry you before a big game, Gary?
No. Not really, Steve. No.
Not even when you fail to score from 4 inches, like you did against Luton on Saturday?
The ball bobbled.
Maybe so, Gary, but my 2-year-old daughter could have put that one away. Talking of daughters, Gary, will yours be at the game?
No, Steve, she'll be watching it on telly at home with my wife.
With your wife?
Aye.
Well, let's hope so.
What?
The rumours about your wife aren't affecting your mental approach in any way.
What rumours?
And why should they? After all, he is your best friend. Why would he do a thing like that? And if she was thinking of leaving you for him, well, then obviously she would have told you out of decency.
Leaving?
So there we have it. Gary Boddle, all set for Wednesday's crunch match.
Sally!
Brimming with confidence and rare.
Sally!
And you can hear that.
Sally!
England versus Yugoslavia live on Sally! Sports Report. This is Steve Trent handing you back to Nick in the studio.
Well, thank you, Steve. Later on, we'll be speaking to snooker star Dean Drury. You may remember last week, Dean was 13 frames up against Eddie Charlton. And then Steve interviewed him, and Dean went out and lost 14 successive frames. And tried to slit his wrist in the dressing room.
Oh,
you're right, kid.
Yeah, I had a terrible night's sleep last night.
Yeah?
Began with this nightmare.
Oh, what is it?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't wake up. I had this terrible dream. London had just been nuked, you know, and there were firestorms everywhere, and the only people left alive were me, Freddie Truman, and Janet Street Porter. Yeah, and Janet Street Porter was like going round interviewing all the corpses about style for Network 7, you know. Oh.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay. Just try and get some sleep, eh?
Right, yes, yeah, sir. Yeah. That's no use, love. I keep thinking about work.
Well, try thinking about something else.
As I left work tonight, the producer said, "Don't do anything I wouldn't do." It's very worrying.
Why?
Well, I don't know what sort of things he wouldn't do. So if I don't know what they are, I might accidentally do one of them, mightn't I?
Andy.
And then he'll get annoyed.
Andy.
He might fire me.
Andy.
I know. I'll get him to make me a list of the things he wouldn't do. Then I'll know not to do any of them.
Andy is just an everyday expression. Forget it. Go to sleep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you know what you had the gall to say to me? He said I brood over things. I brood over things.
Well, when did he say that?
1974. March 3rd, it was. He thinks I've forgotten, but I haven't. I don't forget. Oh, did I tell you? I bumped into an old schoolmate of mine today, Dave Dalton. Hadn't seen Dave in years. He cheated playing Sabutio against me in 1965.
Look.
Tuesday, it was.
Will you stop dwelling on the past? Mm. Think about all the nice things in the future.
Oh, right,
like
yeah.
The holiday in Spain next year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Probably be ill again. Like I was in Greece 4 years ago.
Now, the doctor said it was all in your mind, imaginary, psychosomatic.
All right, so that's why I spent 10 psychosomatic days in a psychosomatic toilet, throwing up down a psychosomatic bog, and ending up in a psychosomatic oxygen tent, was it?
Just calm down, shut up, and go to sleep.
All right. Do you know what Nick said to me last Monday? He said I was unreasonable. I'm not unreasonable, am I? Am I unreasonable?
Oi, 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 wake up, wake up!
What is it?
Am I unreasonable?
Oh, God, yes, yes, you're most ridiculously, absurdly, unreasonably little git I think I've ever met.
Simple yes or no would have done.
You turn things over in your tiny brain again and again. You witter on obsessively about the past. Just forget it, okay?
Okay, okay.
Understood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry.
Now just go to sleep.
Right. I can't believe the arrogance of that man. That bloody man.
Who? The producer?
No.
Nick?
No.
Well, who then?
Baldwin, mishandling the abdication crisis like that. Honestly, it makes me so cross.
Funny, you know, because I've not been sleeping well either, you know. Yeah, the guy next door, his parrot used to belong to Placido Domingo, and sings La Boheme all night. So in the morning, I thought, I know, I'll go down the park, have a kip down there, right? So I'll go down the park, fall asleep on the grass, just drifting off. And again, I had a terrible dream. Emlyn Hughes and Mike Channon.
Oh, no.
Analysing the FA Cup final.
Oh, no.
In French.
Le Cadre City, ils ont fait brilliant, ils ont joué très bien.
D'accord, d'accord, pour moi. Le garçon huddle, pour moi. Il ne veut fight, pour moi.
You know, I'm just shaking there. Suddenly I'm woken up by the park keeper. He's nudging me with his foot.
Excuse me, sir.
Huh? Yeah? What?
I'm going to have to ask you to leave the park, sir.
What?
I've had complaints from the other park users that you're breaking the park regulations.
Wow.
Well, you haven't got a radio on, have you, sir?
Sorry?
Well, park regulations clearly state that anyone using the park must play their radio at full volume until the sound is stilled. Now, you're the only one in the park not doing it. You're just spoiling the atmosphere for everybody else.
But I haven't got a radio with me.
Oh, a troublemaker, eh?
And he throws me out the park, you know. I'm walking down the street, bang, I get knocked down, I'm lying there, semi-conscious. This policeman comes up.
Okay, sir, take it easy. You're probably in shock. Now, in your own time, what happened?
Well, I was walking along, right, and suddenly I get flattened by this messenger cyclist. He must have been doing about 40 miles an hour on the pavement.
And what exactly were you doing on the pavement, sir? Well, you do realise the pavement is intended for cyclists. I mean, how are they supposed to take all their shortcuts if pedestrians like you clog it up? It's a recipe for anarchy.
Well, how am I meant to get up the high street, then?
Sideways, with your back pressed hard against the wall. Like all the other pedestrians, see?
Come on.
I'm sorry, sir. I'm going to have to charge you with reckless walking.
I couldn't believe it, Andy. I tell you, I give him all my details and stuff. I think, right, I'm hungry. I duck into this little restaurant, have a light bite to eat. I call for the bill. It arrives really quickly. And I wait 40 minutes for them to come and collect it. Eventually, I let off a couple of distress flares when the manageress came over, you know.
Everything to your satisfaction?
Yes, I'd just like to pay my bill, thank you.
I'm afraid we don't accept this, sir.
What?
Well, it's cash, sir.
Yeah.
We don't accept cash. Lowers the tone of the restaurant. Makes it seem like the sort of place frequented by second-hand car salesmen.
But that's hard cash. My money's as good as anybody else's.
Money?
Come on.
Oui.
Remove his watch and then throw this piece of lowbrow detritus into the gutter from whence he sprang.
Merci, madame.
I tell you, that's the snobbiest McDonald's I've ever been in. Anyhow, now, Andy, I am furious,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
But I think, hang on, the way I saw it, sensibly, I can either lose my rag completely, or I can calmly and coolly and logically treat the whole experience as one of life's more absurd little setbacks. So I lost my rag completely, right? I'm shouting and ranting in the street about the park, the cyclists, the cash, all the passers-by, and you know what? They ignored me. I tell you, you try and point out to people how our social values are being completely distorted and destroyed, and they completely ignore you. Andy, will you stop reading that book?
Sorry, say something. It's just I've got involved in this book. It's Jeffrey Archer's latest. It's very good.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Now, you see, the story is this, right? The hero is this ambitious, dynamic ex-MP and novelist who pays this complete stranger £2,000. She'll say she slept with him, right? She sells the story to a newspaper. The hero sues the newspaper. At the trial, the judge falls in love with his wife. The jury find in the hero's favour. The hero gets a huge wave of public sympathy, massive publicity for his West End play, gets to go on Wogan, where Wogan says how delighted the whole nation is for him because he's so dignified and when's he going to be Prime Minister? Amazing. And because he's apparently been through this awful ordeal, everyone forgets that before it started, they all thought he was a pushy, obnoxious little ratbag. It's a brilliant plot.
Yeah, yeah. Bit far-fetched, though.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Come with us back in time to Italy in the year 1387 AD, and Europe is in the grip of the Dark Ages.
Oh. What day is it today?
Tuesday.
You lose track. Oh, sod it, I'm fed up with these Dark Ages. Let's have a Renaissance.
And so was born the glory that was the Renaissance. The Renaissance. The flowering of cultural and artistic genius that resulted in magnificent architecture, scholarly masterpieces, superb paintings, and a nice little earner for hotels in Florence. Perhaps the epitome of the Renaissance man was the great Leonardo da Vinci. Controversy was to follow Leonardo throughout his life. His fresco of the Last Supper was denounced as blasphemous because it showed Judas picking up the bill saying, "No, please, this one's on me." But Leonardo's most productive period was under the patronage of the infamous Cesare Borgia.
Well, Leonardo, what inventions have you come up with today?
Many wonderful things, my lord. This is a machine that will use whirling blades to achieve flight. Mm. Is it not a wonderful thing?
So nice, yeah.
These are charts which show the mysteries of the body, the vital organs, and all their functions.
Fascinating.
These do not please you? What would you like me to invent, my lord Borgia?
Leonardo, I would like you to invent a machine for putting things into people's food when they're not looking.
The other colossal figure of the Renaissance was Michelangelo. He produced magnificent sculptures, 7-foot-high statues of naked heroes with very small private parts to make their owners feel smug. But his greatest achievement was in Rome.
Come in, your holiness. I have completed it at last. I have finished the Sistine Chapel. It is my greatest work. Well?
I thought we agreed to do the whole lot in sunburst yellow.
In 1546, Michelangelo began the construction of St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome, but he died broken-hearted when the Pope insisted on crazy paving. Genius also flourished in the world of philosophy. In England, for instance, the humanist Sir Thomas More found himself in confrontation with the absolutism of Henry VIII.
Thomas! You displease me greatly.
It grieves me to displease you, my lord. But it is my solemn belief that the greatest glory God bestowed on man was his reason. And if reason tells me that my lord is wrong, then God tells me so. For reason is his instrument to inform and persuade the hearts of men.
Thomas, I hereby strip you of all your rank and charge you with treason. Thomas, you hit me. Why?
Because though reason may move the hearts and souls of men, it will never replace a good smack in the gob.
The Renaissance soon established itself all over Europe, except for Wales, where they asked to have the Dark Ages back. Sadly, there's not time to mention all the key figures of the Renaissance, men like Alberti, Donatello, Giotto, and Sid Plunkett, who treated Michelangelo for backache. All these, and many, many more, went to make up the glory
that was the Renaissance. Come with us on yet another journey through the contraflow system of the unknown as we bring you another in our series, Tales of the Impossible. This week, episode 2 of Journey to the Center of the Brain.
The story so far. Brilliant scientist Professor Hugo Bronkowitz has a blood clot on the brain. All that can save his life is a team of top scientists who've climbed into a submarine, which has been shrunk down to microscopic size and then injected into the dying professor's bloodstream. The microsub's crew, consisting of Troy Benson, Max Stromberg, and their sexy but also quite intelligent assistant Lola, are feeling tense.
So far, so good. I just hope this microsub works.
Well, surely it's been tested, Troy.
Only once. A microsub with its crew was injected into Oliver Reed's bloodstream. The sub dissolved within seconds. One of the crew survived. He'd spent 6 minutes swimming around in Ollie Reed's blood, poor devil. He sang Una Paloma Blanca nonstop for 18 months.
No.
They reckon when the hangover finally arrives, it'll kill him on the spot.
Everyone hold on tight. We're approaching the stomach and our senses detect traces of chicken vindaloo.
Oh, my God.
Here we go. Damage reports.
The hull's been badly dented by chickpeas. We've got cucumber rajita in the turbos.
And our senses are clogged with mango pickle, Troy.
What's that noise?
Hey, it's coming from that organ over there.
Bloody depression. This is Gordon Bloody Bennett.
Just as I suspected. He's got a grumbling appendix. Where are we now?
Entering the heart. Heartbeat is slow and steady.
Thank God. If it speeded up at this point, the pressure would smash the sub to bits.
Senses indicate dream activity in the brain and whispered speech. We're picking up just two words. Kathleen Turner.
Oh, my God. He's having a Kathleen Turner dream. He's seen body heat 9 times. We're in trouble.
The heart's slowing, Troy. Slowing dramatically. He's in a heavily sedated state. Arm and almost in a coma.
Senses detect two new words whispered repeatedly. The Gunners.
Thank God. It's turned into an Arsenal dream. He'll be tranquilized for hours. Days, even.
We're approaching the brain, Troy.
Good. Now listen. To get to this blood clot, we will have to enter the brain by that lobe there. Here goes. Okay, everybody. We're now actually inside the professor's brain.
Wow, this is amazing.
Every second, thousands of brain cells dying all around us. Of course, more of the professor's brain cells than usual are dying at the moment.
Because he is ill.
No, because he's having the Arsenal dream.
Troy, we're entering the part of the brain that controls the libido.
Amazing. All those millions of hormones all just winking and nudging each other.
Now we're entering the memory, Troy.
Incredible. All the professor's childhood experiences are stored here.
Now eat your greens, or else the goblins will come and steal your legs.
Stand in the corner with your hands on your head, boy.
Flush his head down the toilet.
Oh, didn't have a very happy childhood, did he?
What sort of mortgage do you want?
Come to cut off your electricity.
Dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Some real cowboys fitted this radiator.
Now we've reached his adult memories. Fascinating.
But come on, Max, we must hurry.
Take me. Take me, my Viking warrior.
What's that one, Troy?
Obviously the memory of some recent sexual entanglement. Now come on, we must hurry and find that blood clot. Come on.
Oh, yes. I'm yours, my hunky stallion.
Come on, the professor may just have seconds to live.
Okay, Troy, let's go.
Don't worry, my darling. Troy will be back for hours. He's in a lab working on that stupid microscope idea.
Okay, stop engines. Let's take an hour for lunch.
But Troy, the professor's in danger.
Troy's useless in bed. Not like you, you superstar.
Make that 2 hours for lunch.
You said just an hour just now.
Look, who's the commander, me or you?
Tune in next week when the microsub tries to escape through the professor's navel and is engulfed by a gigantic bit of blue woolly fluff. in episode 3 of Journey to the Center of the Brain. And some news from America. Oliver North is going to run for president to firm up what till now has been a purely informal arrangement. And good night.
The Million Pound Radio Show is written and presented by Andy Hamilton and Nick Revel and featured Felicity Montague and Harry Enfield. The show is produced by Paul Mayhew-Archer.